All right, 8:09 here on this Monday morning. And this morning, as always, we're pleased to be joined with the District 42 State Senator Mike Jacobson. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning. Great to be here.
It's great to have you in. I don't know. Is this like vacation? This isn't vacation mode, right?
I don't think you
can call that, right?
Well, I will tell you.
At least in the state senator, obviously, you have other duties.
Well, I will tell you this. From the legislative standpoint, this feels like vacation, even though there's a lot going on yet, and this is really a 12-month job. But I got to tell you, following this last 90 legislative days, but really 6 months. I mean, we started the first week of January. It has been a long, long, grueling pace, and so I'm really glad for the break. It's great to be back in North Platte.
It felt like it was 12 years. I mean, and just from a constituent standpoint and a common Nebraskans, and I think a lot of Nebraskans would probably feel that way, that that was, as you said, grueling session.
It really was, but I do want to give everyone a little bit of an insight into really kind of what happened and why I think the next session will be much better. You know, there were certainly some social bills that were brought and some that did not get out of committee, but many that did. And so there was, and given the fact that there were in this nonpartisan body, there are 32 Republicans and 17 Democrats, and actually technically now 16 Democrats and one independent. So there was a concern coming in that the minority really wanted to do everything they could to slow the session down and really stop the agenda. So that was really kind of the goal. And so as soon as the transgender bill was introduced, LB 574, that was where the gauntlet was thrown down,
right?
And we began the filibusters. And I got to tell you, I was surprised, and I think the speaker was surprised, of the stamina of Senator Kavanaugh and her just absolute conviction that she was going to stop that bill. And then once the bill did finally pass in an abbreviated form, you know, was going to continue to filibuster. And really, it was at that point when really the rest of the progressives in the body, really, it was about 8:30 with about 10 days left in the session. And they sat down with her and said, hey, this has got to stop. You know, we've got to get some things done. None of us are going to pass any bills. Nothing's going to get done. And oh, by the way, the legislature is still going to pass a lot of bills, albeit through Christmas trees. And really, the official count is we passed 56 bills that contained 291 bills.
Right.
Okay, so almost every committee priority bill was loaded up with other bills.
Mm-hmm.
So how does that compare to previous years? Well, if you go back on 90-day sessions, which are every other year, and you go back to 2021, I think we had right around 290 bills passed in 2021. And in 2019, I think they passed about 320 bills. So we're really right on pace for the number of bills that got passed. The controversial bills that they were concerned about, which was the abortion bill, and which was modified. It was originally it was a 6-month ban, and ended up being a 12-month ban. And the transgender bill was modified back, but nonetheless passed. And so really, the filibusters didn't have the impact that they really wanted. And I think at the end of the day, the animosity that was being built was really going to create a problem for some good legislation not being passed simply because of who introduced the bill. And I think that became very clear. So I think what happened was there was an agreement that let's move on and it's over and let's focus on the future. And so the last week of the session was really very productive. And I think we left there on a really good note. And I think in my conversations with the speaker, you know, in fairness to the speaker, he's kind of a purist. I think he outlined how long he was going to allow a filibuster to run. And he said that early on. And then when it got abused, he really didn't feel like he could come back and change it. Many would argue that he probably should have, but nonetheless, That's his prerogative, and I support him in that effort. And at the end of the day, he found other ways for us to move forward with the session. But I don't think anybody on the left or the right want to come back next year and go through what we did this year. And so I think, in fact, I'm visiting with Walt Radcliffe, who's a lobbyist who's been around for 50-plus years probably in the legislature. He's never seen anything like this. And and if you talk to any of the former senators that have been down there, that it's kind of unrecognizable. And so I think there's an effort really to try to bring the legislature back to a little more of what it had been in the past. And so I would expect that really without a lot of rule changes, I think just enforcing the rules that we have or creating the interpretations that need to be interpreted in the rules that we have will get us a long ways as we move into the 60-day session next year.
Talking with State Senator Mike Jacobson here. And obviously, I think there's probably a decent amount of our constituents that don't agree with Senator Kavanaugh's move there. That being said, the passion she has for it, you would want your I mean, there was something that you disagreed with, you know, vehemently, like many of our constituents. You'd probably want the same passion for you. I don't know if you'd go the way she did with filibustering, but you can appreciate the passion for what she cares about. The problem is you got to be able to move forward now.
That's exactly right. And I think the bottom line is that you're going to sacrifice every other bit of legislation for that. And from your constituent standpoint, was that really fair to your constituents?
Right.
I mean, how many of your constituents really had strong convictions about that bill versus all of the other legislation? And she had a number of bills that some of which would have passed and would have created more funding for she always talks about children. Well, there was other funding programs that she probably could have gotten done. You know, unlike Ernie Chambers, she really, her deal was kill this bill, that's the only thing I want, and I'll sacrifice all the rest of my legislation for that. Ernie was always kind of into, here's what I want, give me this, and it's not the end of the world. And or he would come in and filibuster for 2 or 3 days, then go back to his office for a week, and you wouldn't see him, and you'd move and get stuff done. So there was the primary differences. But you're correct. The other thing I would tell you that people need to focus on is, you know, rural senators need to keep in mind that we're in the minority and we're going to become more of the minority in the future. Mm-hmm. So we want to be very careful about any rule changes that would really deny the minority, because the time could come when it's really not, you know, you look at the splits that are there, you got rural and you've got urban. You see that, but it's not overly pervasive, but it is to some extent on taxes. And I would also tell you that there's some Republican, Democrat, and then there's some, you know, just issues that get divided in different ways. And so you see different groups of minorities along the way and who's in the minority at the time. So that's why there's a real reluctance to make the rule changes to where the minority can't provide some ability to slow the process down.
And you alluded to it a few minutes ago, but my worry as a, you know, a citizen of Nebraska, you're my senator, so I don't directly have a link to Ms. Kavanaugh, but what prevents her from doing this again next year?
I think what will prevent her from doing it next year is her colleagues will not be there to support her. And I believe that the speaker will now use the dilatory motion rule, which is if you're going to get up and say, if you guys want to go to your office, go ahead, because I'm just going to filibuster all morning and I'm going to do this motion, then this motion, I'm doing this to waste time. The chair will rule her out of order and we'll move on. So I think that's what we'll find. I truly expect Speaker Arch to kind of lay it down next year that we're not going to go 8, 4, and 2 hours on general, select, and final reading, that will not be the minimum time before you can have a cloture vote. My guess is, and what I would have done if I were the speaker, and I'm not interested in being the speaker, by the way, but you know, if I were the king...
No politicking here.
Yeah. I would tell you that what I would have done is I probably would have said that the rule book doesn't outline 8, 4, and 2. That's the way it used to be in the rule book. It's out. So it just says that you can call for a cloture vote when there's been full and fair debate. Well, when you've got just one person speaking and they're the only one in the queue and they're telling you that they're just wasting time, then you ought to entertain and call in order a motion for cloture, move for cloture, and move on. And the Speaker wouldn't allow that this year because he had declared ahead of time that we'd go 8, 4, and 2 hours. And I think next year he's probably going to not. I think he's going to make it clear that once we seem to have had full and fair debate, that a cloture motion would be in order at any time as long as the queue's not full of people waiting to debate.
At that point, you've reached you're over fair and full debate.
I mean, exactly. Yeah, that's exactly right. You know, I want to talk a little bit about what happened in the session this year. And probably the most current event, I know in my newspaper articles this week, you'll be reading about the whole property tax situation and what the legislature did. It's probably timely. I think everybody got their little yellow cards in the mail. And from what I'm reading in the newspaper, a lot of people fired up about, well, gee, my property value went up and I didn't do anything. And what's going on? And I can't afford this. And so let me bring a little clarity to what's going on there. Keep in mind that the county assessor is not the enemy here. They have guidelines in terms of how they value property. And so they go out and they have assessors who go out literally and look at properties and move the values around. In some cases, they have to do across the board based upon the types of properties. But I would just ask you this when you get your valuation. Would you sell your home for the value on that yellow card?
No.
That's my point. Yeah, that's my point. The answer generally is no, I wouldn't sell it for that.
Right.
Okay, which tells me that it's probably still slightly under the market value.
Right.
So that argument I can understand, but
yeah.
And we had talked off air a little bit. You had said that this is inflation in action.
It is.
And that's true.
This is truly the case. This is inflation in action. Why are we seeing property values up when you haven't done anything to your property? And the answer is because when you look at the cost of new construction, when you look at the limited supply of housing that's here, and the demand for housing, that's what's driving it up. And then the question, and when you say the demand for housing, well, what caused a lot of the demand for housing? Well, part of it was all of this stimulus money. People need to understand that when you look at the definition of inflation, it's too many dollars
for chasing too few services.
Yeah, too few of goods and services. Yeah. And so what happened? Well, the federal government injected all of this ARPA money and all this stimulus money of all kinds into the economy and put it in the hands of people during the pandemic. And meanwhile, people left their jobs, stopped working, and we broke the supply chain. So now we're in a situation where we had limited supplies, building materials were in short supply. Meanwhile, there were all these people wanting to buy. So what happened? It just drove the prices up. That's inflation. And so people start saying, well, this is a problem for me. Let's say that, for example, I'm a retiree and I'm on fixed income. Well, yeah, my house may be worth 10% more, but I can't afford the taxes on it. And they're right. And that's one of the casualties of what happens here. If you can sell your house for that, but then where am I going to live? And do I want to sell my house that I've lived in all of my adult years, and is that something I want to do? That's why property taxes are such a problem, and that's why efforts in the legislature to try to shift that burden, and that's what we're doing is shifting the burden, is important. Keep in mind that the state of Nebraska has no ability to levy property taxes. The only way the legislature can impact your property taxes is by providing revenue to public schools.
Which is the biggest piece.
Bingo. They're taking the largest piece. Generally, they're taking 50% or more of the property tax bill goes to the public schools. Currently, the state of Nebraska, or prior to this year, state of Nebraska was ranked 49th of 50 states in the amount of aid to public schools. Hmm. We changed that this year with a significant increase in the TIOSA money, and we shifted to where we're giving $1,500 per student for every student in the smaller schools that are not equalized, meaning they're not getting TIOSA dollars. So now we're going to be moving money into our smaller schools at to the pace of $1,500 per student, which will help offset some of the revenue that they're taking from property taxes. However, this is being done with some strings attached. The legislature saying, meanwhile, when we give you this money, public schools, we don't want to see your budget going up by more than 3% when plus the growth in student population. And if you want to go higher, it's going to take a 70% vote of your school board to override it, and then you can go another 7%. Hmm. But the bottom line is what we're wanting to do by putting more money into the schools, we're wanting the schools then to take less property taxes and use the state dollars, which the state is getting through income taxes, through sales taxes, and fees. That's the state's revenue source. So the state now is going to fund a bigger portion of the public school bill. In addition, and in exchange for that, we want the public schools then to reduce property taxes. There's where we can move the top line down. The second thing we did is we're going to take, starting in next year, we're going to take community colleges off the property tax rolls as it relates to their operating expenses. So just like the University of Nebraska, just like the state colleges, the state of Nebraska funds their operating needs and some of their construction needs. So what we're going to do with community colleges is we're going to replace the revenue that they're getting in property taxes today to operate the community colleges. That will come from the state. The only levy that the community colleges will have going forward will be a levy to retire the existing bond issues that they have outstanding. And when those bond issues expire, then they will not be able to levy taxes. And the only way they can do a bonding, it would be if they do it as a revenue bond where it is funded through their own internal revenue. So that going forward, just like the university and state colleges, their revenue sources are going to be dollars from the state, dollars from tuition, dollars from grants and contributions. And that's how they're going to fund themselves going forward.
Well, that's a lot of information. So it's a shift. It's not removing. It's a shift of where the money's coming from.
And ultimately, the only way you're going to significantly lower the property taxes is it begins at your local taxing authorities. Okay, your school district, right, your county, all of your political subdivisions, they're the ones who have their budgets. You need to make sure that you've elected people that are going to be fiscally conservative. You got to make sure that they're doing what they need to do and that they're spending the dollars wisely. And I'm not saying that they're not. I'm just saying that's where you need to be focused, is when you go to those budget meetings, listen to what they're spending the dollars on and understand, too, that they're dealing with inflationary pressures as well. But I would say that the state of Nebraska, the governor came in, he wanted our budget increases to be limited to 1.3%. I thought, wow, you're crazy when you're thinking 1.3. We ended up with a 2% budget, 2% increase at the state level. Now, do I think that can happen locally? It's going to be challenging because, particularly in the public school system, a large percentage of your costs are related to personnel, salaries and benefits, right, simply because of the makeup of what you're doing. And a big part of their budgets are very fixed. They don't have a lot of they don't have a lot of flex because there's a lot of mandates at the federal level and to some extent the state, but predominantly from the federal level. And so it does make it more problematic. And so I'm sensitive to the public school system in terms of their funding costs, because it is hard to control when you have all these mandates. And let's face it, there's a huge teacher shortage out there. Mm-hmm. And the way you're going to fix that is everyone's competing for labor. And if you can go in business and you can afford to pay more, then all of a sudden public employees are being poached. And so they've got to be able to pay competitive salaries to stay current as well.
Senator Mike Jacobson here with us here as the state legislature finishes out their 90-day session. And, you know, you'd mentioned, obviously, housing prices going, or, you know, your property tax values going up, and you didn't do anything to your house. Simplify it. Nothing changed on a 2% gallon of milk. in the last 3 years, but the price went up. I mean, they didn't improve the product, what the gallon of milk is being housed in. So naturally, there has to be some rise in your valuation just from inflation itself.
Well, that's exactly right, and I want to also kind of take it back. I know there was an article in the paper over the weekend. I think it was a letter that I read that where somebody indicated that, look, I'm on a fixed income. My income didn't go up 11%, but my property value did. Now, let's also keep in mind that even though the value of your property went up, that doesn't necessarily mean that your property taxes are going up anywhere close to that percentage. Let's keep in mind that what the county assessor is going to do is assess the value. Then ultimately, each of the budgets are going to be determined by your taxing authorities as we get to October. And at that point in time, the treasurer then is going to add up all of the budget requests and how much has been approved for budgets. And they're going to say, here's how many dollars we need. Now we're going to spread it over that tax base that's gone up in value. And now we're going to set the mill levy. So the critical part that's missing in the equation right now is how much is the mill levy going to be? And the mill levy is going to depend upon what those budgets are. So once we know what that number is, we have to solve for the mill levy. So I can assure you that just because your home value went up by 11% doesn't mean your taxes are going up by 11%, because the mill levy is going to come down. And so that would happen on its own. But then when you bring in the revenues that the state has brought in, that should have a bigger impact on reducing it. Furthermore, the state has also significantly increased funding for the income tax rebate so that it'll be credited against what you pay in your property taxes that goes to public schools and community colleges. And that number is going higher. So most people have filed for that over the last couple of years. Mm. Last year, 30% of what you paid in property taxes to your public schools was refunded to you. That number should be higher this coming year. So that is another, that's the bottom line, I call the bottom line reduction. But we're also doing top line reduction by putting money into the public schools, which should allow them to take less in property taxes. So I think we are making strides in that. It's critical that we do, because I am very concerned, particularly about seniors. But I'd also tell you, look at farmers and ranchers. Last year with the drought, you had ranchers who had to significantly reduce cow herds. You had farmers in the southern part of Lincoln County that didn't grow a crop. Mm-hmm. But yet they still paid property taxes.
Right.
And many of them lost money, even with the crop insurance, because of the input costs and land payments. Everything kept going on. So property taxes impact everyone in a very negative way. And so anything we can do to continue to bring them down will be important.
Senator Mike Jacobson, we appreciate the time as always. Anything else this morning you want to mention?
Well, I would just tell you that my staff is still working every day. And so if you do have questions, you can call the office, area code 402-471-2729. And Christina will take your call and get me any messages that I need from those phone calls. You can also email me at mjacobson@leg.ne.gov. And I get those emails, as does my staff, and they will follow up on them. And then I'll coordinate with them if I need to follow up myself. When I get emails from the district, I do respond to them. And so, again, if you've got questions, let me know. I get a lot of emails on things that I can't control. They're either federal issues or they're local issues, right. but we'll certainly direct you where you need to go.
Very good. Thank you so much for your time. We appreciate it. Have a great rest of your day.
Thank you.